Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One. My last lecture ended with this slide of my signature. I treat it as part of my identity. However, if I wanted to protect it as a trademark, I'd find it difficult. Although you might be convinced your name belongs to you, according to English copyright regulations, you don't own it. What you can register for copyright protection is a graphic sign, which may be your name. I'll talk about the procedure in a moment. We will also go through the laws regulating the use of signatures as a means of authorization, including the validity of digital signatures.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1. My last lecture ended with this slide of my signature. I treat it as part of my identity. However, if I wanted to protect it as a trademark, I'd find it difficult. Although you might be convinced your name belongs to you, according to English copyright regulations, you don't own it. What you can register for copyright protection is a graphic sign, which may be your name. I'll talk about the procedure in a moment. We will also go through the laws regulating the use of signatures as a means of authorization, including the validity of digital signatures.
I'm Kathy Jones. Welcome to Green Room. We're all used to buying goods from overseas, but we don't hear much about the environmental impact of such imports. Today I'd like to tell you about food miles. The expression was coined in the 1990s and refers to the distance the food travels from the producer to the consumer. This makes consumers aware that some food travels a long way before it reaches their tables. Some consumers object to this accumulation of food miles and call for more local food in stores. While such calls seem sensible, the evidence from scientific research which could support their arguments is confusing.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
2.
I'm Kathy Jones. Welcome to Green Room. We're all used to buying goods from overseas, but we don't hear much about the environmental impact of such imports. Today I'd like to tell you about food miles. The expression was coined in the 1990s and refers to the distance the food travels from the producer to the consumer. This makes consumers aware that some food travels a long way before it reaches their tables. Some consumers object to this accumulation of food miles and call for more local food in stores. While such calls seem sensible, the evidence from scientific research which could support their arguments is confusing.
Three. I heard you're going to graduate this summer.
Yes, I'll be getting my bachelor's degree in August.
I wonder why most people set their minds on August.
There's a superstition that it should be done by then. The longer you put it off, the worse it gets. Besides, I need to find employment.
Do you have any offers?
Not yet. I sent out a lot of resumes, but I've only got a few responses.
Try the Jobs for Graduates website. I've read they have had the highest success rates in job finding for the past 3 years. By the way, what's your major?
Psychology.
My first choice was the same, but I switched to engineering after the first year.
I guess it's a piece of cake for engineers to get a job.
I don't know about that. It took me about 3 months to get employed.
Really? I'm sure I'll have to wait much longer.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
3. I heard you're going to graduate this summer.
Yes, I'll be getting my bachelor's degree in August.
I wonder why most people set their minds on August.
There's a superstition that it should be done by then. The longer you put it off, the worse it gets. Besides, I need to find employment.
Do you have any offers?
Not yet. I sent out a lot of resumes, but I've only got a few responses.
Try the Jobs for Graduates website. I've read they have had the highest success rates in job finding for the past 3 years. By the way, what's your major?
Psychology.
My first choice was the same, but I switched to engineering after the first year.
I guess it's a piece of cake for engineers to get a job.
I don't know about that. It took me about 3 months to get employed.
Really? I'm sure I'll have to wait much longer.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Of the 12 sports added to the last Winter Olympic schedule, 9 are rooted in extreme winter sports. Listen to 4 speakers expressing their opinions on the new trend. Speaker 1.
As a freestyle skier, I doubt if the inclusion of extreme sports in the Olympics is a good idea. I don't think they should be there, because the Olympics take something away from these sports. Some, like surfing, are traditionally free-spirited and do not have any formal rules. So when freestyle skiers want to compete in the Olympics, they have to follow established procedures, as the authorities want to avoid serious injuries during the Games. Consequently, as there are too many bans in such competitions, the whole thing becomes less spontaneous. I can get disqualified even for a sticker on my board with a funny sentence or a picture on it. That's ridiculous. Why is a sticker a problem for anybody?
Speaker 2. I've trained snowboarders for the jumps for years, and I'm thrilled that extreme sports have been approved as Olympic sports. I'm afraid I don't understand the opponents who say that these sports are too hazardous. As a coach, I know that before athletes take the first jumps on snow, they practice on water to be safe. They are also taught how to fall to avoid major injuries. Another thing is that the Olympic governing bodies have imposed strict regulations, which make qualifying for the competitions difficult for less able athletes. This shows that they care about safety. In my opinion, there's no reason to criticize the new trend. Speaker 3.
As a spectator, I must admit that I was thrilled to watch the new disciplines during the last Olympic Games. To see those enthusiastic kids winning medals was simply fun. Take the American Mary Logan, for example, a silver medalist in freestyle skiing. One mistake she made cost her the gold medal, but when she was asked about it, instead of despairing, she was beaming with pride that she had managed to show off so many tricks. She also joked with her opponents and cheered their performances. And that's the spirit the Olympics need.
Speaker 4. It's outrageous that the Olympic Games authorities reward extreme sports competitors with medals. Nobody ever mentions the possible injuries athletes might suffer from. I'm a surgeon, and I've put too many freestyle skiers in plaster to approve of such careless behaviour. Of course, some rules and safety measures have been imposed to protect the athletes, but extreme sportsmen pride themselves on pushing the limits, and each time they do so, they challenge others to act recklessly. Some competitions are simply too dangerous to be included. The Olympic Games aren't about endangering yourself. At least that's what I think.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Of the 12 sports added to the last Winter Olympic schedule, 9 are rooted in extreme winter sports. Listen to 4 speakers expressing their opinions on the new trend. Speaker 1.
As a freestyle skier, I doubt if the inclusion of extreme sports in the Olympics is a good idea. I don't think they should be there, because the Olympics take something away from these sports. Some, like surfing, are traditionally free-spirited and do not have any formal rules. So when freestyle skiers want to compete in the Olympics, they have to follow established procedures, as the authorities want to avoid serious injuries during the Games. Consequently, as there are too many bans in such competitions, the whole thing becomes less spontaneous. I can get disqualified even for a sticker on my board with a funny sentence or a picture on it. That's ridiculous. Why is a sticker a problem for anybody?
Speaker 2. I've trained snowboarders for the jumps for years, and I'm thrilled that extreme sports have been approved as Olympic sports. I'm afraid I don't understand the opponents who say that these sports are too hazardous. As a coach, I know that before athletes take the first jumps on snow, they practice on water to be safe. They are also taught how to fall to avoid major injuries. Another thing is that the Olympic governing bodies have imposed strict regulations, which make qualifying for the competitions difficult for less able athletes. This shows that they care about safety. In my opinion, there's no reason to criticize the new trend. Speaker 3.
As a spectator, I must admit that I was thrilled to watch the new disciplines during the last Olympic Games. To see those enthusiastic kids winning medals was simply fun. Take the American Mary Logan, for example, a silver medalist in freestyle skiing. One mistake she made cost her the gold medal, but when she was asked about it, instead of despairing, she was beaming with pride that she had managed to show off so many tricks. She also joked with her opponents and cheered their performances. And that's the spirit the Olympics need.
Speaker 4. It's outrageous that the Olympic Games authorities reward extreme sports competitors with medals. Nobody ever mentions the possible injuries athletes might suffer from. I'm a surgeon, and I've put too many freestyle skiers in plaster to approve of such careless behaviour. Of course, some rules and safety measures have been imposed to protect the athletes, but extreme sportsmen pride themselves on pushing the limits, and each time they do so, they challenge others to act recklessly. Some competitions are simply too dangerous to be included. The Olympic Games aren't about endangering yourself. At least that's what I think.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today in the studio we have Jack Brown, a computer game designer. Based on your knowledge, what's the gaming industry like right now?
Well, the industry today is more open than it has ever been, because there are no obstacles for anyone wanting to put their material on the web. Beginners use the net to publish their work, though they're aware the chances of being noticed are as low as winning the lottery. Still, the samples made by inexperienced designers flood the net. Companies have to make a huge effort to be able to pick out the best ones from a wide range of talented beginners. Being recruited this way is highly unlikely, not because the companies fail to recognize a real talent, but due to the enormous amount of material that needs to be examined.
What would you advise young artists to do to succeed?
I think it's a clever idea to take small assignments into account and try to work out a small self-sustaining set of clients. This will let you gain the necessary experience. Talent hunters are also constantly going through recruitment agencies seeking talented artists, and from my own experience, applying through such companies turns out to be the most advantageous in speeding up your progress. Another thing that may count is technology, as all steps of game creating are based on it. However, if you're not technologically advanced, don't get frustrated. When you're extraordinarily talented and want to work hard, but you lack knowledge of the latest computer graphic tricks, you will still be able to compete with others.
And what about the financial aspect? Are game designers paid enough?
Today, the young often complain about their earnings. They claim they're lucky if they can make enough to make ends meet. What's more, they don't usually get a full-time contract, so they need to supplement their income doing odd jobs. This was not the case when I started. 20 years ago, game writers usually worked full-time, making enough to earn a living. What they were dissatisfied with was that their salaries hadn't gone up for years. Well, it seems they have even gone down since then.
And the last question, where do you get your ideas from?
Well, new concepts are everywhere, that's obvious. But I value things which most people would consider unlikely sources of inspiration. The first thing is free writing. It's one of the best ways to find new, fresh ideas if I feel burnt out. I just start putting down words. Anything that comes to my head. I don't edit, don't pause, don't consider. Just let it flow. I end up with a lot of rubbish, of course, but occasionally something comes up that I can work with. An alternative source of inspiration, and a valuable one, is my friend's place. He's a real bore talking about his fishing achievements all the time, but he has 6 kids and I love talking to them. We play board games, take walks, or even have pillow fights, and I watch and listen to them. Children often think out of the box, so it's really stimulating. They can trigger a brainstorm that will work.
Thanks, Jack.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today in the studio we have Jack Brown, a computer game designer. Based on your knowledge, what's the gaming industry like right now?
Well, the industry today is more open than it has ever been, because there are no obstacles for anyone wanting to put their material on the web. Beginners use the net to publish their work, though they're aware the chances of being noticed are as low as winning the lottery. Still, the samples made by inexperienced designers flood the net. Companies have to make a huge effort to be able to pick out the best ones from a wide range of talented beginners. Being recruited this way is highly unlikely, not because the companies fail to recognize a real talent, but due to the enormous amount of material that needs to be examined.
What would you advise young artists to do to succeed?
I think it's a clever idea to take small assignments into account and try to work out a small self-sustaining set of clients. This will let you gain the necessary experience. Talent hunters are also constantly going through recruitment agencies seeking talented artists, and from my own experience, applying through such companies turns out to be the most advantageous in speeding up your progress. Another thing that may count is technology, as all steps of game creating are based on it. However, if you're not technologically advanced, don't get frustrated. When you're extraordinarily talented and want to work hard, but you lack knowledge of the latest computer graphic tricks, you will still be able to compete with others.
And what about the financial aspect? Are game designers paid enough?
Today, the young often complain about their earnings. They claim they're lucky if they can make enough to make ends meet. What's more, they don't usually get a full-time contract, so they need to supplement their income doing odd jobs. This was not the case when I started. 20 years ago, game writers usually worked full-time, making enough to earn a living. What they were dissatisfied with was that their salaries hadn't gone up for years. Well, it seems they have even gone down since then.
And the last question, where do you get your ideas from?
Well, new concepts are everywhere, that's obvious. But I value things which most people would consider unlikely sources of inspiration. The first thing is free writing. It's one of the best ways to find new, fresh ideas if I feel burnt out. I just start putting down words. Anything that comes to my head. I don't edit, don't pause, don't consider. Just let it flow. I end up with a lot of rubbish, of course, but occasionally something comes up that I can work with. An alternative source of inspiration, and a valuable one, is my friend's place. He's a real bore talking about his fishing achievements all the time, but he has 6 kids and I love talking to them. We play board games, take walks, or even have pillow fights, and I watch and listen to them. Children often think out of the box, so it's really stimulating. They can trigger a brainstorm that will work.
Thanks, Jack.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.